Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday, April 5th, 2022 meeting of the House Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by the good people of the House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them, and for the public, these same materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they are attached in the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Mr. Lee, would you please take an oral roll call of members?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Roll call commence now. Chair Davney?
Present.
Representative Sandstead?
Present.
Representative Crescia?
Present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Daniels?
Present.
Representative Damith?
Present.
Representative Dravkowski? Representative Dravkowski? Representative Erickson?
Erickson, present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Marcourt?
Marcourt, present.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller, present.
Representative Richardson?
Present.
Representative Thompson?
Present.
Representative Walgamott? Representative Walgamott?
Walgamott, present.
Representative Shung? Representative Shung? Representative Joachim?
Present.
Mr. Chair, report, we have quorum.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee. Representative Marcourt, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from our Monday, April 4th meeting? And if so, would you like to move approval?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move approval.
Thank you, Chair Marcourt. Any discussion to the Marcourt motion, members? Seeing none, members, this is an oral vote. If you would please unmute. All those in favor of the Marcourt motion approving the Monday, April 4th minutes, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Chair Marcourt. Members, today we plan on concluding the staff walkthrough of the DE amendment that we began yesterday, take public testimony, and take member questions on the contents of the DE amendment. A reminder to you all and to the public that tomorrow our plan is to mark up the bill during our regular time slot. And if we need additional time, we'll reconvene during our regular committee time on Thursday morning. Any questions regarding the schedule for this week? I am not seeing any. With that, I'd like to hand over the virtual gavel to Vice Chair Sandstead. Vice Chair Sandstead?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. Today we will begin by hearing from Mr. Strom, who will walk us through Articles 10, 11, and 12. Good morning, Mr. Strom. Please begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Thank you so much. There's just a couple minutes left of the walkthrough. Article 10 is the Community Education and Lifelong Learning article of the bill. And there are two sets of changes in this article. The first has to do with the adult basic education or ABE program. The changes to that program are threefold. First, the overall amount of money that's in the statutory set aside for the program is increased by $1 million a year. Second, an alternative way to capture the growth in formula from year to year is included in the provisions. Currently, that's limited to a growth factor based on the contact hours, and House File 4300 proposes to extend that to increases in the formula allowance not to exceed 3%, and has a limitation that the growth not go negative. The growth is averaged over a 10-year period, so that there's still time for that cap limitation to be put in place without a fiscal effect. And then the third change for the ABE program is to raise for those primarily smaller programs that have higher per hour costs, what's called the contact hour cost, before the formula offset goes in place, that amount is raised from $22 to $28 per contact hour. The second change in the Community Education and Lifelong Learning article is to fully fund one battery of the high school equivalency tests. Currently, the state pays for 40% of the cost of that, not to exceed $40. Madam Chair, that's a summary of Article 10.
Please continue.
Madam Chair and members, Article 11 is the agency article, and there are four different categories of changes here. The first of those is the small provision for the Minnesota State Academies in Faribault that allows the academies to recognize rental income from all sources as and essentially keep that as their own revenue for their uses. The second two sections in the article were from the Permanent School Fund Office of School Lands Director. Those are the changes that were discussed in committee earlier, I think a week or so ago. And then finally, the last two changes have to do with the budgets for the Department of Education and PELSP. For the Department of Education, the overall budget is increased so that additional funds are available for VPK, pre-kindergarten monitoring and administration. And there's $540,000 added to the agency budget for the tasks associated with the process for redoing the specific learning disabled category of special education for the rule. The process is proceeded, and that provision was in detail was talked about the other day, but the funding for that is in the agency budget. And then last in this article is the change to PELSP's budget to speed up the licensing applications, and that's an increase of $660,000. And Madam Chair, that's Article 11.
Last one, Article 12.
And Madam Chair, members, Article 12 is the forecast adjustment article, and this just resets all of the appropriations that are driven by pupil counts or other estimates to the February forecast amounts. So, Madam Chair, that's a summary of the last three articles.
Well done, Mr. Strom. Thank you, as always. Members, next we'll be hearing from Commissioner Mueller. Welcome to the committee, and please present your testimony.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chair, committee members. My name is Heather Mueller, and I'm the Commissioner of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to offer my support for this bill and the crucial investments it makes in our students, families, educators, communities, and schools. While I keep my comments to the budget aspects, I will note that as I hoped, these investments do truly complement so many of the policy proposals that Chair Richardson and the governor put forward that are also in this bill. I applaud the House for providing such a robust target for education. This truly meets the historic opportunity we have in front of us to rise to the challenges we have endemic to our education system from causes due to and existing before the COVID-19 pandemic. This budget supports solutions that are evidence-based strategies that first and foremost centers our students. I will touch upon some of the highlights for academics, early education, whole child and family supports, structural investments, mental health, and educator supports. It includes a range of student supports that puts academics across the grade spectrum at the forefront by funding programs such as the governor's bold literacy plan and access to rigorous coursework. These targeted programs are further supported by a strong commitment to a multi-tiered system of support, which supports the individual academic, behavioral, and social emotional needs of each and every student. The chair has rightly recognized that these investments and all the other ones in the bill are enhanced with a strong commitment to high quality early education. I'm pleased to see the adoption of the governor's targeted and comprehensive pre-kindergarten proposal to reach over 23,000 four-year-olds with full day opportunities through a mixed delivery system. And we know that academic success requires further support for the whole child. It is absolutely essential that this bill invests in programs that meet the needs of the student where they are and where their families are. That's why I'm so happy to see that this bill invests in wraparound services from full service community schools to culturally specific learning opportunities and after school programs. While the governor's budget provides a one-time 2% bump in the general education formula, I believe that this bill more than makes up for that in the other structural investments that align with the governor's Due North plan. While students receiving special education services have been identified as needing in addition to services to support them for a variety of reasons, they are first and foremost general education students. This means that they deserve appropriate funding for not only their general education, but they also deserve in addition to dedicated funding to meet their identified special need. We have consistently heard from our school partners that the state should step up where the federal government has let us down and commit more funds to reduce the special education cross-subsidy, and this bill makes a significant dent in the cross-subsidy. Likewise, our students that are learning the English language have consistently been underfunded. They, too, are general education students first, and they deserve appropriate funding for not only their general education, but they also deserve, in addition to, dedicated funding to support their acquisition of academic listening, speaking, reading, and writing. This bill boldly seeks to eliminate their underfunding in the next few years. I also appreciate the investment in American Indian Education Aid to match the governor's proposal. Our American Indian students are consistently the most underserved student group, and these funding supports dovetail with the American Indian Education Policy Package proposed by Sherry Richardson, the governor, and the lieutenant governor. We have heard from almost every partner and corner of the state, including this committee, that the mental health of our students and educators must be a priority for the state in the wake of the pandemic, and frankly, challenges that existed regardless of the pandemic. I applaud your investments in proactive systemic mental health solutions, including funding to increase student support personnel in our schools, to develop a mental health workforce pipeline, to support mental health innovation grants, and to provide schooling to mental health grants. We know that students who receive appropriate mental health supports have improved academic achievement, are more likely to graduate, and are more likely to attend and successfully complete college or enter into the workforce. As I've said before, to have a sustainable, engaged, representative, and passionate educator workforce, we must continue our investment in educator success. Thank you for continuing the momentum that was created by last session's investment in our teachers of color and American Indian teachers by more than meeting the demand for Grow Your Own programs that outstripped last year's appropriation. I was so glad to see that similar proposals and investments to the governor's proposals provide aspiring teacher retention bonuses with a focus on teachers of color and American Indian teachers, as well as providing training for our support professionals. If we truly want to recruit and retain people in the education profession, then we must stop admiring the problem and take action by making real investments in the education workforce. Again, I truly appreciate the hard, thoughtful, and reflective work that was put into this representative budget. I look forward to working with the chairs as we move forward on these proposals with this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to change the trajectory of Minnesota's lives, students' lives for the better.
Thank you, Commissioner Mueller. Members, next we will move on to public testimony. We have a very long list of testifiers, or I shouldn't say public, I apologize. We do have a list of testifiers we'll be moving to first. It's a very long list. We have allowed 2 minutes per person for this testimony. Please keep your eye on the chat. Ms. Burt will keep a running list of time remaining so we are able to go through this. We have approximately until 11:40 for this testimony. I will read the name of the first person up as well as the person on deck so they can be ready to go. Our first testifier today is Paula Cole, Executive Director of E4E Minnesota, and on deck is Scott Krimquist. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and present your testimony.
Good morning. I'm Paula Cole, Educators for Excellence Minnesota. I'm the director here, and we are an organization that ensures that teachers have a leading voice wherever education policies are being created. We are super excited and very grateful to all of you for allowing me to testify in this limited time. This is a gorgeous bill for education lovers. And I really want to speak into specifically for the policy funding that will build on last year's efforts to recruit and retain teachers of color. Also, our members are really supportive of removing a particular MTLE barrier for teachers who have already completed a PELSBY approved program, for example, you know, University of Minnesota graduates and other college preparation programs. We're supportive of reducing discipline disparities by banning dismissals in students in grades K-3 and also promoting the use of non-exclusionary practices and policies. We support requiring ethnic studies instruction and expanding rigorous coursework opportunities for disadvantaged students, and also requiring 80% of compensatory revenue to be spent at the school site that generated the funds in line with governor's recommendations. I understand that it's a very thoughtful committee. There's work trying to determine, like, how do we measure poverty? And that might take a while, but there's something we can do right away for the funding that's already allocated. There's no reason why the districts are getting half of the funding that, you know, has been raised by the number of students in poverty in specific and designated sites. So while we figure the other thing out that we are very supportive of, I'm hoping that we can make, you know, this little tweak that will move money to the kids who need it. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Scott Kronquist, and on deck is Deb Henton. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hello, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Scott Kronquist, and I am the Executive Director of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. Thank you for the opportunity to share some comments on House File 4300. Prior to the session, the EMSD Board adopted three key priorities for the session: stabilizing education funding, supporting student mental health and personalizing learning, and increasing and diversifying the educator workforce. We are very appreciative that House File 4300 includes significant provisions in each of these areas. In terms of stabilizing funding, addressing the special education and EL cross subsidies have been top priorities for AMSD members for years. The phase out of the EL cross subsidy by 2026 and the significant reduction in the special ed cross subsidy included in House File 4300 will go a long way towards stabilizing funding for school districts. As you have noted, Chair Dabney, addressing these cross subsidies will mean that when the legislature provides a 2% formula increase, school districts will actually realize a general fund increase rather than having that funding go to addressing these shortfalls. On the student mental health and personalizing learning front, we strongly support the funding for the student support personnel and the Level 4 Mental Health Innovative Grants. These programs will help our districts meet the mental health needs of our students as we recover from the pandemic. We also appreciate the modernization of the online learning law to allow school districts to use digital learning options to better personalize learning and provide additional opportunities. Increasing and diversifying the educator workforce was a priority prior to the pandemic, and its importance has only been magnified. The increased funding for the Grow Your Own program, the aspiring teacher retention bonuses, and the Collaborative Urban Educators and Greater Minnesota Educators of Color program will be tremendously helpful in making progress in this area. There are many other important provisions, such as VPK and declining enrollment aid, but I know I'm just about out of time. I will wrap up by again expressing my thanks for a supplemental budget bill that meets the moment by providing critical resources for our students and our schools. Thank you again, and we stand ready and willing to work with you and provide whatever assistance we can in the remaining weeks of the session.
Up next is Deb Henton. On deck is Shep Harris. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I am Deb Henton, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, also known as MASA. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and thank you for your support of public education. The Supplemental E-12 Funding and Education Bill, as amended, has the support of our organization. We are grateful that the bill is a positive response to issues MASA has included in our funding priorities and that many of our members have testified on over the years. Why do I say testimony over the years? Because we have known for a very long time that the cross subsidies in EL and special education have drained resources from general education and are unsustainable. We are certain you often knew what we were going to say about the cross subsidies before we even took our seats to testify. Superintendents across the state can recite the growing dollar amounts of their cross subsidies with ease. They know firsthand how much general fund money is diverted to cover these unfunded costs. You have demonstrated with this bill that you recognize the severity of the cross subsidies and address them. If this bill passes and eventually becomes law, you will have initiated a structural change to funding E-12 education that will lead to stability and consistency while providing necessary funding for English learners and special education students. I dare not say this is the Minnesota Miracle 2.0, but it comes close. The funding included in the proposal for compensatory revenue and declining enrollment will assist with addressing the impacts brought on by the COVID pandemic. We are thankful for those additions and others, such as the focus on providing more mental health support, grow your own programs, voluntary pre-kindergarten, literacy efforts, working groups on metrics for calculating compensatory education funding, and special education tuition billing, and much more. I will conclude my remarks by emphasizing that this committee has an unprecedented opportunity to create a significant structural impact on school funding. Each child in our public schools who will benefit from your approval of this bill represents a compelling reason for you to do so. I hope you seize the opportunity and act favorably on this proposal. Thank you very much.
Up next is Shep Harris. On deck is Scott Helland. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Shep Harris, and I'm with Fredrickson and Byron, but I am testifying today on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Independent Schools. So on behalf of the tens of thousands of non-public students and families across the state of Minnesota, the Minnesota Association of Independent Schools, known as MACE, is supportive of the DE1 amendment to House File 4300. As you heard last week, during testimony, MACE is a diverse consortium of independent schools from Duluth to Faribault and here in the Twin Cities, ranging in socioeconomics, size, scope, pedagogy, from secular and religious types of schools to single gender and even boarding schools. Specifically, MACE would like to thank the chair for inclusion of two specific items which will help non-public students and I believe also actually will help public schools. The first thing is allowing the board of a school district and a non-public school to mutually agree to a written plan for transportation of non-public students. We've learned many lessons from COVID, and in this particular case, giving additional local control and flexibility will be beneficial for that public non-public partnership. The second item that MACE is very supportive of and frankly very excited about is authorizing and funding non-public pupil aid for elementary school guidance and counseling services. MACE is very appreciative of the acknowledgement of the need for additional mental health supports for all students. But as you heard in the testimony last week, early intervention is key. And for many, today's non-public student is tomorrow's public school student. So these two items will only strengthen, or in some cases, create additional opportunities for stronger partnerships between public schools and non-public schools. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you. Up next is Scott Helland, and on deck is Matt Shaver. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. I'm Scott Helland. I represent Literacy Action Network, who's a professional organization for adult-based education in the state of Minnesota. I specifically want to speak in regards to adult basic education aid in this bill. I wish to thank this committee for working to pass the bill that will work to help adult education across the entire state of Minnesota. The bill increases the statutory statewide ABE aid and allows for growth in the formula, which helps all programs as they gear up to serve students in a time of increasing costs and time of technology-driven education for our students. The bill also increases the maximum contact hour rate from $22 to $28 per year. This is the part that really gets at adult education for all Minnesota, since it focuses the help for greater Minnesota programs who have a harder time aggregating students, which means it costs more to serve students, but is so important that adult education is a statewide program. That with this rate change allows for rural programs with less population density to serve the students in their communities. Thank you for your support of adult basic education in Minnesota, Madam Chair and committee.
Chair Sinstead, you're muted.
Thank you, Sarah. Up next is Matt Shaver, and on deck is Sarah Slayford Freeman. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Sandstead, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Matt Shaver, Policy Director at EdAllies. Thank you for the opportunity to share some thoughts on the amendment to House File 100. The progress proposed on expanding access to school meals by leveraging the federal community eligibility provision while ensuring funding for students in poverty won't be impacted by our obsolete compensatory revenue system is a wise decision that we fully support. Families with students in schools and school districts where more than 40% of students are in poverty will now be able to count on having access to daily breakfast and lunch at no cost to them. That is huge progress, and yet it is not big enough. We have the resources and the opportunity to provide school meals for all in the state. Imagine a system that ensured a ride to school or a chair to sit in for each kid only if the district met an arbitrary poverty threshold. The investments in buying down the special education and English learner cross subsidies are significant and not enough in two ways. We have cross subsidies because of inadequate formulas. The underlying dysfunction of the formulas need to be fixed and then beefed up to provide adequate funding so as a state, we won't need to have cross subsidy reduction aid. I want to finish by highlighting a few areas where I can confidently say that real listening and authentic engagement took place by leadership of the House committees. The recess language that's included in this amendment, the teacher shortage definition included in this amendment, the charter and education management organization definitions, and positive changes to compensatory revenue, as well as creating a working group on an appropriate proxy in addition to a working group on special education tuition building. And finally, not taking steps backward on teacher licensure. I'd like to live in a world where this kind of leadership was unremarkable, but have found that the policy process often does not work this way. So we are grateful for opportunities to work in good faith and in service of kids with legislators of both parties and with advocates who may not always see eye to eye on every issue. We look forward to continuing to do so as the process moves forward. Thank you to the committee for your time today, and thank you all, particularly staff, for your public service to our state.
Thank you. Up next is Sarah Spafford Freeman, and on deck is Kim Lewis. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. My name is Sarah Spafford Freeman. I'm the parent of three students in Minneapolis public schools and a longtime education activist and organizer. I appreciate the committee's commitment to public education and am grateful that this bill takes a meaningful step in the right direction, but I'm here to say that it's not enough. The state's chronic and structural underfunding of Minnesota public schools, especially its underfunding of critical special ed and English learner services, have resulted in tremendous harm to students, educators, and the schools they're a part of. The $9 billion state surplus represents a once in a generation opportunity to address this harm and fully fund these critical services. But this bill doesn't do it, and that's a huge missed opportunity. The impact of the SPED and EL cross subsidies on districts like Minneapolis can't be overstated. Our operating deficit this year is almost exactly the amount of these cross subsidies, and the projected deficit for next year is nearly $100 million, resulting in reduced services, staffing constraints, and increased burdens for families. I hope the committee will commit to closing these cross subsidies, fully funding these critical services, and truly investing in Minnesota's public schools. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Up next is Kim Lewis, and on deck is Joe Gothard. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Kim Lewis, and I'm testifying on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association, representing all 333 locally elected public school boards across Minnesota. This morning, I am also here on behalf of the elementary and secondary principals and Schools for Equity in Education. We appreciate the opportunity to share our thoughts on this education omnibus bill. Chair Dabney, a sincere thank you for the time and effort you and your committee and staff have put into constructing this bill. Your priorities to provide resources for schools and relationships with students align with what we strive to do each and every day. Thank you for hearing our members' voices about our highest priorities, special education and the English language cross subsidies. The appropriations in the bill will provide not only excellent instruction and services, but budgeting relief and allow significant progress towards eliminating the achievement gap. Again, our members, thank you for listening and acting in a bold way. There are several other policy and financial provisions we support. We thank you for helping us address mental health with funding and supports. making VPK available to more four-year-olds, increasing teachers of color, increasing career and technical aid, and addressing the staffing shortages by providing financial resources and other retention efforts. And we are especially grateful for the increase in salary cap for school board members to work in our districts as bus drivers, substitutes, ESPs, and other positions. As you've heard us say once or twice before, we value local control, and our school boards and administration understand the needs and challenges facing students and families, and believe as elected officials, they should have local decision-making authority and the flexibility to do what's best for their communities and constituents. As you're aware, the pandemic has presented enormous challenges for all of us, but students, parents, teachers, and other staff in particular. Accordingly, school boards believe it's imperative that policymakers refrain from enacting unfunded mandates. We are disappointed redefining instructional hours was not included in the bill. We all want to take what we've learned during COVID in the last year and continue to redesign high schools to promote individualized learning. Again, we're so very appreciative of your understanding and validation of what it costs to deliver special education and English language learner instruction. Thank you for your time, and I'm available for any questions at a later time.
Thank you very much. Up next is Joe Gothard, and on deck is Seth Putz. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Joe Gothard, proud superintendent of St. Paul Public Schools, serving a diverse student body of over 34,000 students. Our EL program serves over 10,000 learners who speak 101 languages, 16% for special education services that are served in all federal settings from birth through age of 21. We also serve a large percentage of students who are poor, highly mobile, and homeless. Our amazing staff show up every day to ensure that our students are welcome, well-fed, and can access a variety of instructional options for college and career readiness. I would like to thank the House for this comprehensive proposal to stabilize school funding in Minnesota, particularly the chronic underfunding of special education and English language learners. Across the state, districts spend $147 million on EL services in FY20 than they received in categorical revenue. In the last 20 years, the EL population has grown by 200%, yet this formula hasn't been adjusted since 2003. Not for inflation or the change in demographics. The $2 million last year was helpful, but far short of what districts need to provide the instruction to ensure academic literacy and additional supports needed for EL students to access all instructional opportunities like CT certificate programs, AP, IB, CIS, and PSEO. Our success is critical to the future economy of Minnesota as our bilingual community continues to be the fastest growing population in Minnesota. We also appreciate the investment in VPK, mental health, staff training, and support of teachers of color. We have trained 156 teachers, 60% who are BIPOC, receiving license and master's in special ed or elementary instruction. We did not receive funding in the last round for our very successful urban residency program. In my 27-year career, I have never encountered more challenges than the last 2 years. I want to assure you that these investments will be laser-focused on providing high-quality instruction for all students. And again, I thank you for your great support.
Thank you so much. Up next is Seth Putz, and on deck is Caitlin Snyder. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Seth Putz. I'm maintenance supervisor at Lake of the Woods School. Thank you for your time to speak in favor of an education bill that has so much been needed financial support for our public schools. However, I do need to register a concern with one provision in the bill, the language allowing school boards to transfer LTFM funds over to the operating capital fund. Many school districts have a capped amount of levy authority in LTFM, while the largest school districts have uncapped levy authority and deferred maintenance. We appreciate the consideration given to HF 3224 to add more equalized LTFM levy authority, but the effort appears to have stalled out. We understand the constant pressure on schools to deal with the immediate needs, staffing, student support, under updating curriculum and technology. This is why deferred maintenance, gets deferred. Having a dedicated revenue stream like LTFM helps us address and maintain a focus on our facility needs, and there are many. We try to keep our buildings energy efficient. We need to respond to state and federal requirements for radon testing, as this bill includes more attention to lead testing and remediation work. We understand the desire by school officials to have maximum flexibility over state funds that come their way. However, there's wisdom in the state requiring certain funds to be reserved for specific activities, and LTFM is one of them. The budget pressures on schools are constant, and our facilities maintenance efforts for important things like energy efficiency and lead remediation will be jeopardized by the new proposed fund transfer language in the bill. Thank you for hearing the perspective of school facility staffs today.
Thank you so much. Up next is Caitlin Snyder, and on deck is Brad Jensen. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Caitlin Snyder with Education Minnesota. I would really like to commend this committee for taking a very comprehensive look at the challenges facing our students and our educators this year. This bill is a strong step forward, not just for our four-year-olds in VPK programs, but also recognizes our adult learners in GED classes and ABE classes, kids that are still needing to get special ed services as they have been impacted by the pandemic. So that broad swath of our kids represented here is really incredible. You're also meeting kids' needs by making sure that they have a school counselor, school nurse, school social worker, school psychs. You're supporting some of our highest need kids in level four programs, providing wraparound services at our full service community schools, making sure kids see themselves reflected in their curriculum, which is so powerful. You're also supporting our educators. We can't have good schools without good educators. And you're making a strong investment here in our Teachers of Color program to make sure that we're bringing more folks into the profession, diversifying the profession, and creating that pipeline. I'd also like to commend the committee for the work that you've done to keep our educators in the classroom. You were taking leaps forward in improving the working conditions of our school employees. You're bringing forward items to make sure that our special education teachers have due process time. You're making sure our tier one teachers, who are incredibly vulnerable, can bargain. You're providing the ability to bargain about classroom size to all of our school employees, and you're providing bargaining protections to our teachers in voluntary pre-K. I'd also like to commend the investment in para training. That's been a long fought for issue, something that's been in statute and not happening, so thank you for that. There's always more items that we'd like to see, but really this is a great step forward for our kids and for our school employees, so thank you.
Thank you so much. Up next is Brad Jensen, and on deck is Zong Vain. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brad Jensen. I'm the president of the Minnesota Association for Alternative Programs, or better known as MAP. Thank you for allowing me to testify on amendments to House File 4300. MAP has appreciated the committee's allowing us to be involved in your deliberations this year and the multiple opportunities our students have had to highlight alternative education programs throughout the state. We are excited to support the number of items in the amendment to include the grant funding for our successful MAP STARS student program, linking extended time revenue to increases in general education formula, and allowing online learning programs that have been using asynchronous instruction before the pandemic to continue to do so. However, we would like the committee to respectfully consider adding language which would extend the eligibility for public school enrollment for 2 years to help those students finish their coursework that were so severely impacted by this pandemic. MAP stands ready and willing to assist the committee in any further discussions on this and any other proposals this year. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify throughout the year, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you so much. Up next is Zong Vain, and on deck is Liz Lynch. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Dabney, members of the committee. My name is Zong Vang with Ignite After School Strategy Manager and Policy. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today about House File 4300. Thank you for including a significant investment in the After School and Community Learning Center Grants Program, chief authored by Representative Lee. The House proposal is a significant boost in financial resources for the out-of-school time field. We've had unmet needs and demand for too long, and we are optimistic that this will allow the field to meet those demands, especially as we try to create some normalcy for students recovering socially, emotionally, and academically from the pandemic. These funds will help expand access to programming in underserved communities, with regional balance in the distribution of funds. These funds will allow students to develop skills and behaviors necessary to succeed, help students in grades K through 12 access high quality after school and summer learning opportunities, and encourage school attendance and improve academic performance. We have many community partners who have quality programs and are ready to get to work. This grant program is a great place for the state to make an investment in the lives of our students. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Up next is Liz Lynch. On deck is Jeremy Kovash. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Liz Lynch, and I'm the Executive Director of the Lake Agassiz Regional Library System, headquartered out of Moorhead. And I'm also serving as the Minnesota Library Association Legislative Chair for the 2022 session. First of all, happy National Library Week. The Minnesota Library Association and our friends across the state would like to sincerely thank Representative Wolgamont for his work on HF 1710 and to you, Chair Dabney, for including this in the omnibus bill. We have been advocating for a change to stabilize the funding formula for the 12 regional public library systems for many years. This bill will ensure more stable and equitable access of state funding to regional public libraries across the state. Lastly, thank you for including the policy language defining school libraries and media centers. This is a step in the right direction to ensure students have equitable access to resources and technology, and that schools have a plan for selecting and deselecting resources. Information literacy has never been more important than it is today. Thank you for supporting public and school libraries so we can continue to provide vital education and services to the people of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Up next is Jeremy Kovash. On deck is Saeed Ogundiran. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Jeremy Kovash, Executive Director of Lakes Country Service Cooperative and Legislative Chair of the Minnesota Service Cooperatives. Thank you for including several cooperative education funding initiatives in your omnibus bill, specifically including Chair Sandsteed's bill to fund the concurrent enrollment teacher partnership with an increase in the ongoing base of support will help us to make graduate tuition affordable for concurrent enrollment teachers. I also want to note the funding for Setting 4 programs, which could help several cooperatives across the state serving high-need students. We're proud of our Setting 4 programs, and we're always seeking better ways to serve these students. Additional funding for their mental health needs is greatly appreciated. You have many other initiatives in the bill calling on rural educational cooperatives to step forward and help in the education of our students. We stand ready to assist. Thank you for this bill.
Thank you so much. Up next is Saeed Ogundiran. On deck is Kamarius Cox. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair and committee members, for inviting me to present today. I am Shade Ogundiran, Program Director for YMCA Beacons. Beacons is a program that engages young people as leaders and learners by essentially transforming schools into active youth centers after school and in the summer, providing high quality educational, recreational, and leadership development activity opportunities for kindergartners through 12th graders. Beacons features youth voice and choice in all that we do. All program choices are youth-driven, youth-led, youth-directly influenced program design, content, and offerings. Beacons partners with 18 schools across Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Richfield, serving 8 elementary schools, 5 middle schools, and 5 high schools. In 2020-2021 school year, we served 975 young people. Prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, we were averaging 3 times as many young people. Numbers are expected to increase as the pandemic eases. 82% BIPOC, 78% low income and free and reduced lunch, and 48% and 52% males are the young people that we serve. When the pandemic began, Beacons used innovative methods to shift to remote programming. We ran clubs virtually at the beginning of the school closures and did our best to reach young people. Once mandates eased, we were allowed to gather social distantly in small groups. Beacons opened spaces at YMCA branches for young people to get support with distance learning. We provided Wi-Fi, meals, and academic support for students who attended. We also ran enrichment groups with all COVID-19 safety protocols in place. In efforts to support families' needs, we reached out to more than 1,000 families to conduct an informal assessment needs of their needs. And we responded to basic needs such as utility support, food support, and homeschool advocacy. Beacons as a program is needed now more than ever. More importantly, the people that make Beacons what it is needed more than ever. While teachers are doing their best to adapt to the higher academic needs, Beacons youth workers are making sure that young people have the resources they need to be in their desks. From food to tutoring to transportation to work, research shows that if a young person does not have their basic needs met, even the most amazing teacher is not able to teach. While the city is doing their best to combat violence and increase in crime, Beacons youth workers are connecting with youth on a human level to create places of belonging where they can feel safe and try new things. Our centers.
We are at time. I apologize. I need to stop you here.
No worries.
Up next is Michelle Chang. Oh, I'm sorry. Up next is Camarius Cox. On deck is Michelle Chang. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you to the committee and chair for having me this morning. My name is Camarius Cox. I'm a senior at Roosevelt High School in Minneapolis. Beacons at Roosevelt has been such an important part of my life and success in school. Every day I look forward to seeing the Beacon staff at lunch with time catching up about my day. after school, I'm able to join one of my many clubs and groups that offer to students. I'm mostly involved to a club called Black Student Union. Sade, our leader for Black Student Union and also Beacons, is a very helpful and she helped us in our performance. I always have a voice in Beacons, and that is one of the things that makes it really special. The last 2 years have been very difficult for me. I was a virtual student for my entire 11th grade year, and it was really challenging. There were no clear boundaries for many students for what school and what home is. This has created a lot of stress for me and my peers. Through the pandemic, Beacons was able to provide a space for students to get help in distance learning and still be part of the groups and clubs, which makes me love this so much. This was so important and helped me stay focused on completing my work and graduating on time. The adults in Beacons are role models and mentors in my life. Sade really brought me onto the Beacons team and helped me get a job working at Beacons elementary school leader groups for kindergarten through second grade. Nico, another adult staff, has made me not only a better basketball player, but he has taught me some very good life lessons. And Troy has been one of the best bosses. They are really always able to answer questions and help me on whatever I need. I also work at Beacon's summer program in St. Paul, and that gave me a lot of experience. During the recent school strike, Beacons fought to keep the program in the school even without the teachers present. Myself and many of my friends were able to attend Beacons. Beacons made me want to teach and be a youth worker when I grow up and when I graduate high school, and I'm excited to see what comes next. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Up next is Michelle Chang, and on deck is Colleen Moriarty. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hello, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Michelle Chang. I am the lead organizer for education with the Coalition of Asian American Leaders. We are a social justice network of 5,000 Asian leaders across Minnesota. We are also part of the Minnesota Ethnic Studies Coalition, composed of over 2 dozen organizations, including Education Liberation, UNIDOS, and Education Evolving. On behalf of these organizations, I want to thank the chair and members of the committee for including strong ethnic studies provisions in the Education Finance Omnibus Bill. This legislation recognizes the value of ethnic studies for all students and makes ethnic studies a required subject area and a graduation requirement, establishes an ethnic studies task force, provides funding for implementation and for grants to school districts to develop and implement ethnic studies courses. Ethnic studies courses are needed more than ever to help cultivate students' knowledge of self while appreciating the differences around them and develop critical thinking skills to empower them to be agents of positive change. As a Hmong person, I hope for tomorrow where young Hmong people and their peers learn about Hmong history and culture as part of core curriculum and not part of just Vietnam War section of textbooks. Ethnic studies courses value the rich cultural and ethnic histories that exist across communities in our state. To not include these histories and stories in the classrooms would be to say that the experiences of these communities are not real or relevant. It is time that schools recognize and include the assets in their own communities. We don't have to go far to learn about each other. And our young people thrive when they are able to relate to what they are learning in the classrooms. Ethnic studies courses would present a full and accurate education to youth in which they can see themselves and all of their peers represented. Thank you again to the chair and members of the committee for including strong ethnic studies provisions within the omnibus bill.
Thank you. Up next is Colleen Moriarty, and on deck is Yashi Awaz-III. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Colleen Moriarty, and I am the Executive Director of Hunger Solutions Minnesota and a co-chair of the Hunger Free Schools campaign. We'd like to express our disappointment not to see an investment in school meals for all, given the urgency of the federal waivers disappearing in June. This will leave many schools and families in a position where they will struggle with the cost of school meals and a return of hunger in some of the classrooms in the school year. At the same time, we offer our extreme appreciation for the significant investment in the community eligibility provision, an important first step towards universal meals in the highest poverty schools. By providing full funds to all CEP schools and ensuring they will continue to receive adequate compensatory revenue, we will be taking a huge leap forward in our state's ability to use this critical program. A lot is at stake when it comes to the investments in school meals and our education budget, since we all know kids can't learn if they're hungry. We appreciate this first step in the right direction and look forward to continuing to work together to make sure all students in Minnesota have access to school breakfast and lunch in the future. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Up next is Yashi Awaz-III, and on deck is Josh Downham. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Yashi Awaz-III, and I'm the member of American Heart Association Minnesota Advocacy and Community Impact Committee. Thank you, members of the House Education Finance Committee, for including funding for Head Start and universal school meals. The COVID-19 pandemic has been devastating for many children by school closings, the transition to virtual learning, and for many, a disruption in how they eat. With the economic downturn due to pandemic, one in five children was food insecure in 2020. And Black and Hispanic households are more food insecure than the white families. To combat the food and nutrition insecurity plaguing our nation, many schools were able to provide free breakfast and lunch to students regardless of their income during this difficult time. New research has shown that the medium and large schools that use the universal meal model saw a cost saving while maintaining nutritional standards. But unfortunately, the waivers that enable this are only temporary and are scheduled to expire in June 2022. By funding universal school meals, we would provide equitable access to healthy meals for children, remove financial burdens for families, help children who might be on the edge of eligibility access to nutritious meals, and mitigate the shame some students face in their school cafeteria. Persistent childhood poverty paired with rising rates of foster care and other factors make Head Start more important than ever as a tool to help at-risk children and families. Community-based and proven to work, Head Start programs are ready to help more at-risk children. Finally, every child deserves access to healthy meals, and Head Start program would successfully remove barriers and ensure children are getting what they need to thrive. Well, thank you again, and we hope we can count on your support to expand access to Head Start through Minnesota and throughout Minnesota and provide universal school meals to all school kids. Thank you again, and I appreciate the opportunity to present.
Thank you so much. Up next is Josh Downham, and on deck is David Parker. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thanks, Madam Chair. My name is Josh Downham, and I'm with the Minneapolis Public Schools. I want to thank Chair Dabney and the committee for diving deep this session on several important issues that were left undone last year. This bill makes good progress to address several of those critical issues. The 2021 legislature passed a 2% basic formula increase for the next fiscal year. Some called that an historic increase. Because of the erosion of the basic formula over the past 20 years relative to inflation, a 2% formula increase equates to a 1.1% operating budget increase for the average district here in Minnesota. Members, I'd encourage you to ask your local superintendents if a 1.1% budget increase is adequate. School districts must buy food for school meals, diesel for buses, and compete for workers. I can guarantee that districts' costs are growing much faster than 1.1%. Given the limited time today, I want to focus on two key areas this bill addresses, English learner and special education funding. The state's current English learner funding only covers 27% of districts' average cost statewide, leaving districts with an underfunding of $146 million. As communities across the state welcome new immigrants, they need the resources to serve them. By phasing in full funding as this bill does, we are sending a message to our English learner families that they are welcome and valued. I applaud the committee for also making special education a top priority. As you negotiate with the Senate, I would encourage you to build in a phased increase into that formula, just as you did for English learner funding. And finally, I want to thank the committee and Representative Joachim in particular for her leadership on addressing special education tuition billing. And as you know, the state needs to do a better job of aligning who determines those costs and who pays those bills. I understand that this is not a budget year. However, the state's record-setting surplus provides an opportunity to ensure districts' budgets do not continue to decline relative to inflation. Thanks for the opportunity to provide testimony.
Thank you. Up next is David Parker. On deck is Simon Hoffer. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, committee members. My name is David Parker, and I'm the Vice President of Research and Development at Serve Minnesota, where we administer AmeriCorps programming as our state's Commission on National and Community Service. I am here to thank you for recognizing the importance of math for our students. I am an educational researcher. I'm an educator. I'm also a parent. And so I am familiar, including at the personal level, what reports like the NWEA have shown in terms of the impacts of the pandemic on student achievement. I know you've seen that. We all know it's concerning, and I think we all think it's beyond concerning. And just to reiterate, those reports show that math achievement in particular has been negatively affected over the past few years of the pandemic. It has had an especially deep impact on Black, Latinx, and American Indian and other students who don't have access to the types of learning opportunities that we know all students need. And so simply put, these achievement and opportunity gaps cannot grow wider. And what students need to accelerate their achievement is strong tier one instruction from teachers in their classroom, and also individualized supports that meet the students right where they are and help them accelerate and recoup their growth. And it's there where the Minnesota Math Corps can help and has helped. As the committee has heard previously from a Math Corps member, Sumi Lee, Minnesota Math Corps members work closely with grade level teams to support students and target resources. And as such, Math Corps members are a critical resource for the schools. And they are because Math Corps works. When students get access to Math Corps, their math skills improve, period. That's a profound thing, and it was needed before the pandemic. It was there for schools and students during the pandemic, and it's, of course, ready to help schools and students move beyond the pandemic.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. I appreciate that. Are you close to wrapping up?
Yep. I was going to say thank you. We appreciate the bipartisan support, and we look forward to doing more in the years to come.
Thank you very much. Up next is Simon Hoffer. On deck is Maren Christensen-Hoffer. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Simon Hofer, and I am 10 years old and in fourth grade. I am here today to say thank you for hearing me when I talked about the importance of recess for kids and not taking it away when kids misbehave. My mom told me that many parents wrote letters about kids who have had recess taken away, and some of them are really sad stories. When I was younger, some of my teachers made me stay inside during recess when they thought I was misbehaving. I don't remember what I did that made them tell me I had to miss recess, but I am autistic, so there is a pretty good chance it had something to do with my anxiety. I am grateful that you are trying to make this a law. Most of us kids are trying really hard to make good choices, but sometimes we just can't. Giving us punishments that make it harder for us to behave just doesn't make any sense. Thank you.
Simon, thank you so very much for your testimony, and I apologize that I mispronounced your name. Up next is Maren Christensen-Hofer. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hi, thank you so much for having me today. My name is Maren Christensen-Hofer, and I'm Simon's mom, obviously. I'm also in my capacity as an advocate for children with disabilities and their families. I work primarily with families of autistic children in our Somali and Oromo communities, helping families navigate services and supports for their kids. And let me tell you that there's a lot of really wonderful work that's going on out there. And there are also a lot of families and schools that are really struggling. In my daily work, I see families that are trying really hard to keep it together. I see students that are struggling with mental health issues. I see students with disabilities that have had a really hard time engaging in school over the past couple of years of the pandemic. And I also see teachers that are trying really hard to do right by their kids. I'm here to say thank you, first of all. Thank you for hearing families and children. And there's a lot to really love about this bill in terms of teacher education, teachers of color. I'm a member of Solutions, Not Suspensions, and we're very grateful for the pre-K or the K-3 suspension efforts. We're excited about the reading and literacy programs, and most notably for addressing the underfunding of special education or the cross subsidy. And I have to tell you, when I hear the term cross subsidy framed as how special education costs districts so much money, I cringe every time I hear that, because this is not a zero-sum game. We've decided as a society that children are a good investment. And the whole idea behind public education is that we invest in education of our youngest citizens, and that pays dividends when those children become adults. The important part of public education is that it's universal. It applies to everyone. But yet we haven't done a great job keeping up our obligation when it comes to the funding for children's abilities. We know that all students benefit when children with disabilities are included in their schools. And I'm really grateful to you for demonstrating that we as a state have prioritized that. So thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next is Sonia Americ, and on deck with our final testifier is Jolie Holland. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Sonia Emmerich, and I am the parent of a remarkable and beloved child enrolled in the Minneapolis Public School District. My child has complex neurodevelopmental disabilities and receives special education services. I'm glad to get the opportunity today to thank you for prioritizing funding special education and including it in the House Ed Omnibus Bill, and to let you know why that's so important to me. We're really lucky to have a fantastic IEP team and school community, and we've been able to come together in agreement about what services would educationally and functionally benefit my child. Yet, my child has received a fraction of the educational services in his IEP. There aren't teachers to deliver his services. In fact, there has not been staff hours to deliver 80% of the instruction outlined in his IEP this year. My family has tried to be flexible and work with what the district can offer us because we've been thinking it's the pandemic, it's short term, this won't be forever. But when I contracted our district due process specialist recently to make sure we were tracked to deliver all his services next year, she told me that she wasn't certain that we would be able to do that. Going without the special education services my child has been identified to need stands to significantly impact his future well-being and safety. We've worked hard to design programming that addresses skills across domains. Without the opportunity to learn and practice those skills, his future housing placement options will be more limited. It will be more difficult to find and retain Medicaid staffing, and he will be more vulnerable to restraint, seclusion, abuse, and sexual assault in any service situation he happens to be in. Legally, the district has to provide his education. We have a team of people who diligently show up and collaborate to try to do it. We have good relationships. We're not fighting with each other. We're doing what we're supposed to do. But it doesn't result in the district providing my child an education because there are not resources to do it. If there was a way to get my kid what he needs with the resources my school district has, I'm confident they would be. We need to close this cross-subsidy and more fully fund special education. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Our final testifier today is Jolie Holland. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Jolie Holland, and thank you, members of the committee. I represent the School Nurse Organization of Minnesota, known as SNOME. We represent licensed school nurses working in school districts across the state, and SNOME wants to deeply thank Representative Burke for her efforts to improve funding for school-related personnel, and the committee for including the school-related personnel provision for more funding on this bill. We especially appreciate the provision that includes permanent funding for a licensed school nurse at the Minnesota Department of Education, which is crucial to school health offices across Minnesota. A licensed school nurse at the MDE understands the challenges we face and can give direction about safe practices and procedures along with so much more. We believe that two-thirds of schools in Minnesota don't have a licensed school nurse, and it's important to have someone in the state to give guidance to school districts. In the future, SNOME is hopeful that the law created in 1986 that only requires a licensed school nurse if there are 1,000 students or more, which is woefully outdated, will be revisited. Our students deserve access to a licensed school nurse. In the long run, we believe this would save the state money because they will get consistent health care versus visits to the emergency room. With this funding, if school administration decides to hire a licensed school nurse, it will benefit all the students and the school staff in their school district. Recent studies estimate that over one-third of LSN time is spent on student mental health. A school nurse may be the only source of health care for some students. Madam Chair, we sincerely thank you, Chair Dabney, and the committee for providing the funding and an LSN at the MDE.
Thank you so much. Members, at this time, it is time for questions. We will let Representative Krishna go last. So are there any member questions? Going once. Representative Erickson, do you have your hand up? It's hard to see on my screen.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is for the Commissioner. So, Commissioner Mueller, in Article 2, Section 13, Subdivision 3, where you lay out model curriculum for the ethnic studies, I'm confused by the fact that you say this is model curriculum, and yet there will be rulemaking, which to me would suggest that there's going to be a required curriculum, even though the word encouraged has been used. Would you please clarify what is meant by the language in that Section 13, Subdivision 3 of Article 2?
Commissioner Mueller.
Vice Chair Shanstead, Representative Erickson, thank you very much for the question. And so in that language, it really helps to identify what an example where curriculum would be, is that the Department of Education does not write curriculum for schools or school districts. And so where it talks about being encouraged, what it actually also does mean is that it provides an example of what best practices are in the inclusion and the development of standards and language that are around those particular areas, but it is not a requirement for our for a separate class or written specifically for that.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Commissioner, I think you better review that language because this is really deceiving and it needs clarification, because rulemaking is rulemaking and you know what that's about. So to use encouraged when there's a mandate is not making sense. I have another question for the commissioner.
Thank you for that feedback.
Thank you. In Article 2, Section 20, where reading by end of third grade statutory changes are explained, first of all, I want to know, are you working with teacher preparation programs to ensure that the science of reading will be used as they prepare candidates for our classrooms?
Mr. Mueller?
Vice Chair Shanstead and Representative Erickson, thank you for the question. Yes, we are. Actually, as part of our bold literacy plan, we have been able to work with not only PELSBE, but also a partnership with the Office of Higher Education to talk about the implementation of the science of reading and ensure that there is a seamless support of what we are developing to support our schools and the professional development that goes there, in addition to what's coming out of our teacher preparation programs. And so I just wanted to clarify that. And I also want to go back in that ethnic studies piece, as we talked just a little bit about. And again, I appreciate that feedback, is that is not MDE's language, but I do understand that is what that language is meant to be. So there was that. But to go back to this question, yes, we are working with the Office of Higher Education and as well as PELSBE.
Representative Erickson, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One last question for the commissioner. In that Article 2, Section 20, under the reading by end of third grade statutory changes, the phrase evidence-based is used, but the language appears to reinforce the science of reading, but there is no clear design or intent for that use of evidence-based. So would you explain that, please?
Ms. Mueller.
Vice Chair Shanstead, Representative Erickson. So when we are talking about an evidence-based, it's being able to ensure that the basic components of the science of reading are embedded with the strategies that help to reinforce that in not only the resources that you are using, but also how you are teaching.
Representative Erickson, any follow-up?
Madam Chair, just one comment to the commissioner. I think if I were you, I'd revisit that language to ensure that it is understood that evidence-based is what you say it is, because remember, we want language to be as specific as possible when our teachers, our school districts, and charters are reading this, because otherwise there's going to be a question. So thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you for that feedback.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I just had general comments, so I can wait until tomorrow or Thursday, so I can get my one question I had, I can get answered offline. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. Members, any other questions?
Chair, I have my hand up.
Thank you. Representative Thompson.
Chair, earlier I missed an opportunity to ask more in detail about school meals for all. And I honestly do know that a student lunch debt is the reality here. In some cases, our children were having their lunches removed from them if they didn't have enough money in their accounts, and given a cheese sandwich and some fruit. And so automatically that would actually, you'd be the kid in the corner. And all the other kids knew that you were the poor kid. And so I really didn't get a chance to hear more about ending our student lunch debt. I do know for a fact this is something I'm passionate about. If you do know, Philando Castile Relief Foundation travels the state paying lunch debt. in the tune of sometimes $30,000 out of Valerie Castile's own pocket. And so I just want to make sure that we are at least thinking about eliminating student lunch debt, because we could afford to feed the kids a healthy hot lunch and a cold breakfast. And so I just wanted to make sure that I put that on the record also, Chair, but also see if I can get some answers to how we're going to eliminate student lunch debt and feed the kids for free.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. Do you have a question for a particular member or testifier?
Whoever could answer that from MD.
Okay. I see Colleen Moriarty has raised her hand. Why don't we start there? Ms. Moriarty.
Thank you. And thank you for your support of Meals for All. We have a large coalition that includes corporate and community members that have been working towards this kind of goal, and that would ease and take care of any school lunch that's been accrued, so any debt that's been accrued so far. We did make some movement in the past years towards eliminating some of the more punitive issues that accompanied school lunch debt, but really the way to capture this and to eliminate school lunch debt is to proceed using CEP, using every tool possible to make lunches and breakfast available to all at no charge.
Thank you, Ms. Moriarty. Representative Thompson, I'm going to actually see if MDE would like to respond to that as well. Perhaps Commissioner Mueller.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Sandsteed and Representative Thompson. As we looked at the components that we were looking to be able to provide meals for universal meals for all students, and so I know that in this particular version of the budget, we do want to be able to help to provide as much support as possible. We know that lunch shaming is and should be eliminated from all school practices, and then being able to follow up on what those lunch debts, essentially what we looked for initially was to be able to provide breakfast and lunch for all students in a universal meals.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Thompson, any follow-up?
So I guess my question would be, is there not money in the budget to actually do exactly what we're saying, which we want to do with eliminating student lunch debt? Because honestly, Chair, like I was here before, maybe in 2016, and we actually said we didn't have, where would we find the money? And here I am post COVID, and we not only had the money, but we were delivering food for free using the buses and dropping it off to our kids. And so if we reappropriate the money that we already have into places that make sense for our children, I think we will have the money. And so that's a conversation that I could definitely have with MDE offline, Chair, but I just wanted to like make the committee aware that this is a reality for a lot of our kids, you know, and sometimes that meal sometimes is the only meal that they have. They go home. Some of these kids go home and their mother's not cooking for them. And that's the reality. And so I just wanted to make sure that I'm bringing the issues of my community to your community also, because sometimes we don't share this stuff, then people don't know that it's happening. So thank you so much. But this is something that I can share offline and talk to the MD offline about.
Thank you very much, Representative Thompson. Other member questions?
Whoop, Madam Chair?
Representative Dabney, I'm so sorry. On my screen, if your hand is up, if you're on the top row, I don't see it. I apologize. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I probably should have raised my hand. That's why you can't see it. I didn't, but I do want to respond. I want to engage with Representative Thompson's concerns because I share the concerns. The question, we have decided in this bill to prioritize assuring that schools with higher percentages of low-income students can feed every child in that school, because we agree wholeheartedly with the Hunger Free Schools Coalition, with Representative Thompson, and with many of our members, I hope bipartisanly, that school meals and, as I used to say when I was teaching, hungry kids are a bad thing. and we should do that. So we are starting with a prioritizing those schools, those families, those children as an important and critical step forward, as Ms. Moriarty described it, towards in a more expansive program in the future. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Are there other member questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Kresha.
Thank you. So this is, and I'll lower my hand now. So just a question to the bill author, just on process. I see no meeting scheduled for Ways and Means at this time, and Ways and Means hasn't passed target. So is this target going to go to Ways and Means for them to adopt singularly or with other ones, or are they sometime after the break going to convene and send targets down? My main question on this is how that will match up.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Kresha, my understanding is that the Ways and Means Committee is anticipating a busy time after we return from our Easter Passover break. I can't speak, particularly since I do not serve on Ways and Means, cannot speak to all the content that they'll be working with.
Representative Kresha, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it poses a bit of a conundrum because, of course, in the absence of real budget targets, while you have a bill here with a number, that's not truly a target. So therefore, we don't know the actual size of the universe for the educational possibilities. So my question would be, in the absence of those Ways and Means targets, I know we're going to go through and we've already passed the amendment deadline, but if we don't get those targets, are amendments down the road going to be in order that change the number because you don't actually have a Ways and Means target?
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kresha, I think we're all going to learn how the process plays out. We've got an unusual year in that the state has the resources to meet the needs of Minnesotans. And in this committee, we're prioritizing the needs of our students and families and schools. And we have the resources to do that. I'm hoping that the Senate will step forward and choose to follow our leadership and commit themselves to Minnesota students and Minnesota's future with robust funding as the House DFL is committing to.
Representative.
I understand that and I respect that. I'm just asking simply on process, because if we're trying to put amendments together and it's unclear for anybody, say Representative Thompson or somebody else, if they wanted to do something to include Meals for All with Mrs. Moriarty, when the absence of a true budget target, my question would be, if that number changes, whether it goes up or down, can we expect that those conversations will be in order, or will they be ruled out of order? Because the rule typically is based on the Ways and Means targets. I'm not trying to debate your intentions or your ideas. I'm just trying to find out what our realm of possibilities are as we try to add and polish this bill with you. And if I don't know what's going to be in order and out of order, I don't know how to come at it with ideas or people that are giving us requests.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Kresha, I appreciate the inquiries and I appreciate the persistence, fair on both counts. I can't predetermine issues of germaneness without an actual amendment in front of me or without having consulted with my leadership, the House leadership, on how they wish to approach these questions. So I've given you the best I can here, Representative Kresha.
Representative Kresha.
Thank you. And Representative Dabney, I'm really not trying to paint you in a corner. I'm trying to understand. I mean, your House leadership has put you in a position where you have no Ways and Means targets. Therefore, everything is soft and flexible. However, soft and flexible as we go into the markup and conversations isn't a good way. I mean, it's not a good way for you. It puts you in a position of inconsistency. It puts me in a position where I'm going to argue that you have no consistency, and I'm not trying to put us at odds. I'm just I'm looking ahead at a very potentially contentious situation where you're going to have to rule for or against things based on information that your leadership hasn't given you. I'm not trying to put you in that position. I'm just telling you that's where we are in the absence of a ways and means targets. And I think, honestly, out of complete respect for you as a chair, your ways and means and your House leadership has put you in a very bad spot. I think we'll navigate the best we can, but I think we can expect that I hope there's some grace as we try to figure this out, because we really don't have a target. You have a suggestion. While I respect that, it's not a ways and means target, and I just want to highlight that issue.
Thank you, Representative Krisha. I think your point has been heard, and I appreciate that. Do you have any other questions before we adjourn?
I do not.
Thank you. With that, members,
Madam Chair?
Oh, Representative Dabney.
Representative Drazkowski has his hand up. Unfortunately, he's in the top row.
He is in my top row. I was questioning whether you did. Representative Drazkowski, my apologies.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the top row, waiting patiently, Madam Chair, so I appreciate that. I'm wondering if is there fiscal staff on the meeting here today that could remind us how much the increase was in spending in the current biennium that was decided upon on June 30th of last year, how much that increase was both in general fund and all funds over the previous biennium for this budget area that we're talking about?
Representative Drazkowski, I will kick that off to either Mr. Strom or Ms. Parra, probably Mr. Strom. Why don't we start there?
Madam Chair, Ms. Beckel might have that number at her fingertips, and I'm looking for it as we go. So I can get back to you in 30 seconds if Ms. Beckel doesn't have that.
Very good. Ms. Beckel, we're going to toss this question over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Drazkowski. As I was working on the jobs and economic policy assignment last year, I don't have that immediately handy, but I will look for that now.
Very good. Mr. Strom, I'll come back to you to see if that was quite 30 seconds.
So sorry, Madam Chair. I'm just struggling here.
Madam Chair, maybe we can actually bring that information into the next meeting. That would be fine with me if we could maybe get kind of a complete refresher from Ms. Beckel and then let Mr. Strom work on his stuff that he needs to work on.
Very appropriate.
I would just offer to members and to the discussion and to everyone who wants additional money for their particular area of interest, and that government is fully funded. That decision was made last June 30th or July 1st. It's fully funded through June 30th of 2023. And we have a bill before us that brings a request for another $1.1 billion in additional funding beyond whatever it is Ms. Beckel is going to report to us at the next meeting. And I think this bill is out of touch with the realities of our budgeting process. I think it's out of touch with the realities of Minnesotans, as they know the government's fully funded, and the Democrats are in a race to spend as much of it as they can. And that's not what I'm hearing from my constituents. I don't think we're seeing the responsibility that we as a legislature need to bring represented in this particular bill. But that's what I have for you today, Madam Chair and members, and I look forward to Ms. Beckel's report. Thank you, Ms. Beckel, at the next meeting. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski, and thank you for patiently waiting with your hand up. Members, tomorrow we will begin the markup of the bill. And with that, our meeting today is adjourned.